What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics and open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Welcome, everyone, to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and I'm so happy you're here today. Today, I have some exciting guests, two ladies who are working in women's rights, who have worked with 1 Billion Rising, the movement that was started by Eve Ensler about 20 years ago. And we're going to have a wonderful conversation about all of that and what's being done today that you can join as well and find out about. But first, as always, I want to open the show with a quote, and of course, let me remind you at the end of the show, we have a wonderful transformative meditation, the Peace Brain Meditation, so stay tuned for that as well. The quote today I really love, this is from the traditional circle of elders and youth, and Chief Oren Lyons is a spokesperson for this traditional circle of elders, and he says, "We as men should not fear our mates. We should listen to their counsel. The elders say the men should look at women in a sacred way. The men should never put women down or shame them in any way. When we have problems, we should seek their counsel. We should share with them openly. A woman has intuitive thought. She has access to another system of knowledge that few men develop. She can help us understand. We must treat her in a good way." What a wonderful, uplifting quote. As a woman, I certainly appreciate that. And I really do believe that women have this more of this second sense, even though, of course, men can have this as well. But certainly, there is a beauty in women's wisdom. And I'm sure we'll be talking about that today and how, really, when women can achieve equality and leadership in the same capacity, the same equality as men on the planet, that this world will change completely. The wars will be eliminated. The poverty will be taken care of. Everything will change on this planet. So I know that's what we're working toward with Peace Brain, is to get into that part of your heart and use your heart to help your head make decisions, to embody that spiritual essence, that intuitive knowingness, that balance of the feminine and masculine energy that we each have. So I love this quote in that it really talks about the role of women as sacred and special and to be valued. And today we have some dynamic women who have pushed the limits in their fields and really are showing what women can do when they are in their power and their strength, with cooperation and love as well. We have Adele Taylor Ulrich and of the Planet Project Movement, and we have Reverend Diane Daugherty, and both of them are just pioneers in the role of women. So let me read you their bios, and then we'll bring them on the show. Adele Taylor Ulrich is co-director of the Planet Project, the nonprofit that Hugh Man Up calls home. And let me spell that for you. It's Hugh-Man space UP calls home. So Human Up. She has spent most of her life fighting injustice and working for a sustainable world. As a playwright, spoken word artist, community educator, organizer, activist, theater director, and actor, her current work focuses on ending rape culture by educating and mobilizing men and women as allies. She would go down kicking and screaming in an effort to help build an egalitarian culture by cultivating compassion, respect, responsibility, and consent. Adele is a vegetarian who lives with her partner and co-director, Ray Manlove, along with three dogs and cats. in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I think she's moved now. But where they all make a lot of noise about love and fairness. And you can find out more about Adele at humanup.org. Now, let me again spell that. It's humanup.org. And she also has a Facebook page, facebook.com/planetprojecthumanup. And then they're also on Instagram and Twitter at HU_MANUP. And then they have a YouTube channel, and that's HU-M-A-N(U), so the YouTube is HU-MAN(UP) with the man and the U as capitals. You can also write her at theplanetprojectmovement@gmail.com. So I'm happy to have Adele on the show. And then the second dynamic lady is Diane Daugherty, and she is a reverend. She's actually a Roman Catholic priest. She is an ordained, validly ordained Roman Catholic priest, which is really interesting as a woman. She's pushing these boundaries, who is excommunicated by the Catholic Church because of her gender. Rather than leaving her call to service, she is following God's call by using Catholic teaching and preaching the gospel message of welcome and inclusion to those on the margins. She was a sister for 23 years and a laywoman for 24 years before becoming ordained. She has worked in the Catholic parishes, hospitals, schools, and Archdiocese of Atlanta, Georgia. She has 4 educational degrees, including a specialist degree in neuroscience of the brain. Presently, she is working to change unjust structures in the church and society by joining all who work on the margins of society to bend the arc of justice close to our earth. You can find out more about Diane at Diane Daugherty's blog, blogspot.com, and let me spell that for you. That's DianeDaugherty.blogspot.com. Diane Daugherty's blog at blogspot.com. Wow. Welcome, Diane, Reverend Diane, and welcome, Adele, to the Peace Brain Show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to be with you all.
Happy to have both of you ladies here. So I know both of you have worked a lot on 1 Billion Rising. So let's talk about that for just a minute. I know here in Atlanta, Georgia. And Adele, are you here in Atlanta now?
Yes, we did move to Atlanta from Lancaster. I must update that bio.
That's what I thought. Okay. So both of you have worked long and hard for several years, I know, on the celebration that always happens on February 14th of each year, started by Eve Ensler on 1 Billion Rising. Adele, could you explain a little bit about what 1 Billion Rising is? And then both of you chime in to what the celebrations were like today, you know, not today, the last month in February, you know, this year, and how they might be seen going forward.
Absolutely. Well, yes, 1 Billion Rising was started by Eve Ensler. It grew out of V-Day. You know, she began 20 years ago with the vagina monologues, which began with just the expression of women's sexuality, which immediately or very shortly thereafter began, grew into exploring the oppression of women and violence against women, and grew into a global movement and through theater. And realizing that that was a kind of a springboard for more, realizing the theater was really powerful, Eve then began a movement, realizing that people were performing the vagina monologues all around the world. All these productions were happening every year during V season, during, you know, on or around V Day, which was February 14th, in the month of February. And there were just productions everywhere, raising money to support work in rape crisis centers, to support preventive education, to try to end these injustices, to try to change masculinity, to try to end patriarchy. She thought, well, we've got to do more because it's not really getting any better. We've got to, it's getting worse. So she thought, well, you know, dance makes such a difference. So she went about, got together with Debbie Allen, and Debbie Allen created this choreography for a dance that has been performed all around the world. And because she called this movement 1 Billion Rising, because 1 billion women and girls are raped or beaten in their lifetime, and that equates to 1 in 3. And that's a horrific statistic, and that is based on the statistics from the United Nations and the World Health Organization. So, and I believe that that's probably a low accounting because of the amount of underreporting that exists.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's probably worse than that. So basically her thinking is we need to continue to rise and create this create this movement that's going to build and build and build and rise in solidarity until we change the way things are. Because the majority of governments are patriarchal. We continue to live in a patriarchal society and have for 6,000 years. The majority of politics are really, you know, capitalistic, and they become, you know, more and more profoundly, you know, women are bearing the brunt of poverty. Women are bearing the brunt of the fact that the 1% is thriving while the rest of the society is not. So basically, these governments are exploitive. So they are the theme continues to be to rise in solidarity. And so these risings happen all around the world in different ways. There are artistic uprisings. People are holding flash mobs and doing this dance that Debbie Allen choreographed. They're holding artistic uprisings of their own. They're holding these different stagings of the Vagina Monologues, of her other work, A Memory, A Monologue, A Rant, and A Prayer. This year was especially significant because it was the 20th anniversary of the Vagina Monologues. And there are risings in countries all around the world, in every single country. In countries where women aren't allowed to dance, they dance anyway. It's pretty remarkable. And here in Atlanta, we have been, you know, holding different types of rising every year. And they're rising against war, against tyranny, against racism, fascism, violence against women, worker exploitation, imperialism. The list is long, against poverty, misogyny. You know, it's remarkable. And gender discrimination and transphobia. And it's really quite a global movement. And she's, you know, Eve Ensler has started something huge that I think is not going to end. And I mean, right before we went on stage to perform the artistic uprising that we held this year, Diane came up to me and said, you know, even Steve Bannon has said this thing is too big. It can't be stopped. This women's movement is something that's unstoppable. So we were feeling pretty happy about the fact that we have really created that kind of momentum.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That is, thank you for that overview. And in fact, if any of our listeners want to go to 1billionrising.org, you'll find mm-hmm. out more about this global movement. And it is, and you're right, there's a list of where all over the world these events have happened. So, Reverend Diane, I want to turn to you. How, in your work with the Catholic Church or with the populations you've been working with, how has this 1 Billion Rising movement you've been able to use that in your teachings?
It's a very interesting commentary because I have to start out by saying, first of all, our own website is 1billionrisingatlanta.net.
Correct.
So if you want to find out what we did in Atlanta, go to that website. But the 1billionrising.org is the international expression. And we don't have everything up yet. I think Adele is working on that. So it's going to be fantastic, absolutely fantastic. But for my own growth, I'm a church girl, and one of the metaphors that came into my mind, or the images that came into mind as Adele was talking, was an onion. And I lived on the outside of an onion, which is smooth and round and large. You can't smell it. But I was always taken care of in the church. And so my trajectory into coming to understand the church itself was very, it was a very tedious path. I was a sister, and the nuns were light years ahead of the priests in terms of growth and movement. So I grew up in a justice culture with the sisters, where we learned the teachings of the church and the gospel that is, quote unquote, supposedly good news to the poor. So I had one foot in that cliff, and I really believed that was the church until I had to work with men in the church. And I came to understand the hierarchy. I had no notion, because as I was being raised, we lived in a culture of collaboration and justice. And when I met up with hierarchical teaching, with men of the hierarchy, I had experience after experience after experience. So I said I was dipped into this hell, and the church that I knew was being set aside for the church that they wanted everyone to see. I call it a false image. And so I went through a huge awakening, because the church of males, the male God, as they call it, God is not a boy's name. I never thought God's name was a boy. But I never heard it. As I was reading gospels and scriptures, I never heard that, because I'm not a boy, and I am an equal to all of them. So I can remember being in the convent once after some horrible experiences. And I walked around, and I was really pissed. So this one nun said, "Well, Diane, who do you think that you are?"
And you replied,
who do you think that you are? And it hit me. I am an equal to all men in the sight of the God who loved me and calls me forth. Mm-hmm. And that is the source of my anger. That's the source of my discomfort. And that's what I do to make other people uncomfortable, because we cannot have a global organization such as the church stand up and tell all people that men are the image of God when they're not. So when I retired, and this was an option, I decided I'm going to stand as their equal. So I did. And I do. And I make people very uncomfortable. So who comes to 1 billion Rising that's a Catholic? Not many. And I came to understand, like I came down to Atlanta in the 70s. The first Archbishop of Atlanta came from my own hometown. And it was his dream that it would be the church that would be the bright lights in all of the houses in North Georgia, that would bring racism to an end, that would monitor militarism, that would allow women to be priests. That was his dream. He died young, and all this other stuff. So, you know, I just have been so confused about who these people are and why they, you know, why are they under the influence of this invisible hand that projects the false image of God and who God is. Mm-hmm. It is the women that I know that built the Archdiocese of Atlanta. We did it. It was our love, our sacrifice. It was our desire. And of course, men who were partners did it too. But we did it with the intention of raising the culture, the Catholic culture, to the excellence of collaboration with all other people that was non-sexist, non-racist, non-homophobic, and did not entertain militarism.
Mm.
So you're talking about unity here. You're talking about, I know you work a lot in interfaith. There's a wonderful quote here I have from Abdu'l-Bahá, and it says, "Religion should unite all hearts and cause wars and disputes to vanish from the face of the earth, give birth to spirituality, and bring life and light to each heart." And that sounds like what you're talking about, is having religion be that light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I also feel that Paul Hallinan is channeling me.
I know you're working a lot, Reverend Diane, in interfaith work. Talk to us a little about how interfaith work, back to the women's movement or issues here. We are at a crossroads in time where really women have an opportunity now to obtain that equality you're talking about. How is the interfaith world addressing that?
There are pockets here in Atlanta that are doing it and are very strong. We did a wonderful workshop with the Turkish refugees in Alfreda on human rights. Mm-hmm. But like everything, we are small cells growing and just trying to find each other. I have a very important volunteer nonprofit job as the vice president of the Federation of Christian Ministries. And surprisingly, there are so many people from so many denominations that are gravitating toward this, because the basis of this Christian federation is that we should be extremely sensitive to all religions and understand we are one.
Yes, I agree.
Mm.
So do you believe that that's happening? That's starting?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's encouraging.
Are there any sort of, I know we're talking locally here in Atlanta now, but are there any, if people wanted to explore more, where would you direct them? Or are there, like, workshops or things coming up that you would like to talk about?
We just had one in Alpharetta, which was wonderful. And there was an interfaith group that went to Argentina, I think, which was amazing. There's a group that comes out of Fayetteville, and Angela Williams runs it. I have met I think it's called the Lashiva Interfaith Community, and they haven't recently put anything on, but they have a strong group of interfaith ministers. So I think what happens is we go to places where we're needed. Like there's an interfaith faith and public policy group that's working now on issues related to things that are going on in this legislature that are going to impact immigrants substantially and the education system. So it seems like rather than meet all together, we as ministers gravitate toward those initiatives that are going to divide us and hurt one another. There's a wonderful group over here, right on Columbia Road, that has declared their church, it's the United Methodist Church, a sanctuary city. And the former mayor had a problem with him. So as a religious group, we gathered together and said, best to leave this one alone. He was leaving anyway.
Good job.
It is. And little by little, I know there's a whole group of interfaith ministers that are participating in the affordable housing issues with the Coalition for Affordable Housing. And we have been going door to door, telling our legislative officials, especially those in Atlanta, that we cannot have a city for the elite. There has to be affordable housing. And it's become a big issue. Even this new mayor said she was going to do that, but has not. She has not thus far done anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we push. But in terms of a gathering together as one, I think the last time we did that was in June at our Interfaith and Human Rights initiative in Alpharetta.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing all that.
I think a lot of it boils down to empathy. In general, I think there's so much privilege that's going on with a lot of the non-melanated folks that are moving in who are in a higher income bracket. And I think that, you know, that comes down to a lot of the work that we do at Human Up.
Adele, please enlighten us what you do with that.
Yes, we're really trying to work on teaching empathy and changing the way we view masculinity. We one of the performance pieces that we do a lot of performance with Human Up, and which is a lot of what we did with 1 Billion Rising here in Atlanta the last couple of years. We did a performance called The Manologues, and they're like the vagina monologues, only they're men telling stories, talking about masculinity, talking about the big picture of male dominance, and also talking about how masculinity is hurtful to men themselves. How, getting told not to cry as a little boy is really harmful, and getting stuffed into a box that they might not want to be in the first place is, and the one-size-fits-all variety is not so great. Putting on that armor and not allowing yourself to be vulnerable and having to be hyper-masculine and tough and the conformity that involves is not so wonderful. And the fact that every interaction has to be based on dominance and what that translates to across the board is destructive from self-care to interpersonal relationships to the environment to neighborhoods to a global cities to the global perspective and
good point.
So we're really trying to nip it in the bud to encourage parents to raise their children differently.
So these monologues, are they available? I know you did it as a performance here in Atlanta for the 1 Billion Rising celebrations.
We did.
I think you have planned to film them and put them out to the public. Tell us more about that.
Yes, we are going to. We did video the performances, and we're not positive as to how that's going to translate in terms of quality and educational use. And we are going to be constantly cultivating new material, and so we will be videoing that. And our hope is to really have a film version of the monologues that can be a body of work that we can take out into community settings in different versions. So it can be the whole of the monologues, or mm-hmm. we can pick and choose. And we're looking at things, you know, like, gosh, how we use pornography as sex education, which is terrible. Really,
oh,
when you think about it, because, well, it's true, though, because, gosh, an 11-year-old can get to some very awful stuff, which is very vile towards women in terms of being awfully disrespectful towards women, and that is the model that is normalized, you know, and then they start thinking that that is how they are starting to treat, that they should treat women. And there's now some research that really is backing that up. And when there aren't good sex education programs out there, and there aren't parents talking to their children about how to unpack that, and they're learning from their peers who are normalizing this stuff too, there, I think we need to be able to take that apart and look at that with a critical eye. So we're going there. We're creating programming based on that. One of our actors was even addicted to twerk videos, and he wrote a spoken word piece on it that is incredibly powerful and compelling. And so that's the kind of stuff we're actually looking at, our socialization to rape culture and what that means personally and politically and in terms of relationships. So we're starting to see studies where people are really going into therapy because they're having a hard time with their actual relationships because of what's happening with their relationship with the glowing screen. So these are the things we're looking at. And the lack of empathy that that translates to for, like, well, what do we care if we're kicking these old folks out of their homes and, you know, we're going to buy this house and build a huge structure. Like, so what? You know, this lack of caring starts somewhere.
It does.
Because we're socializing people to it. And
you're correct. And
you
know, that gets back to the religion aspect of, you know, not just what you're, Reverend Diane, you're talking about is from what you said, the nuns were really working in justice and working with populations and teaching education to people. There is this need for, as you both have said, the empathy somehow to be taught. If it's not taught by the parents, it certainly isn't necessarily taught in the schools. Maybe we do need a religious track or something of spirit to start to let children know and young adults know that, hey, you know, this, you really are more than this physical body, and there's more to you, and to have empathy with cultures and people who look different than you and speak different languages, et cetera.
One of the things that I've noticed is, in terms of our education of people, one thing the Catholic Church did, it ran like a parallel school system. The church was like a parallel church to everybody else. It was, we were taught that it was one true, holy, and Catholic and apostolic church, and everybody else was, there was something wrong with them. So when I got to, I'll tell you, one of the things that really struck me was that I'd never heard of pedophilia. And I was introduced to the expanse of that when the Legionnaires of Christ came to Atlanta and began working in the Archdiocese, and their leader was a pedophile. Remember I used that metaphor of an onion. At every point of my own series of awareness of this illness, it was like peeling back an onion. And when I thought of how these boys are taken from us, they are taken away from society. They're taken away from their families. They are fed an entire culture of separation. They're told when they're ordained that their ordination makes them closer to God than any person on earth. And that's why the church does not want to defrock or get rid of a priest, because that challenges that thinking. Well, to me, it's all false. And one of them, I kept thinking about how we nurture our boys, even in Catholic school, all the way up to high school. We love them. We teach them how to incorporate themselves in communities. We tell them we encourage them to participate in communities, to build communities up, to be people of strong character. And then what happens? So I'm thinking, I make a parallel between what the military does to boys and what the church does to boys. And
interesting.
When you think of pedophilia, they don't recognize it. And I just couldn't understand why. I know many of my friends that are priests lived with pedophiles, and they didn't think anything of it. And I think that comes from ancient privilege of males and a terrible misunderstanding between the between what love really means and sex. And
yeah.
This is a global organization. Men all over the world participate in this. And when I think of the bishops that would find someone that was a pedophile, send them off to a different country rather than face it, I look at the damage that has been done with bishops who have no concept other than to say, forgive us. We are sorry for the damage that we've done. And I just wrote a piece. I don't know if you know, there's a they're redoing House Bill 605, taking out the statute of limitations. What the House bill would give is anyone who has been abused would be able to appeal to the courts after age 25 up to 36. And the Catholic Church, the Boy Scouts, insurance companies are all lobbying against this. And I thought, they will ask for forgiveness. They'll say they are sorry, but they will not create a structure that ends this practice. Why? And I really think until we help them come to terms with this illness, it's a mental illness, and it is it definitely impacts the humanity of men in that culture. They are less than human.
Yes, go ahead, Adele. I was going to ask, what do you address this in some of your work, I know, as well?
Well, we do, and the word privilege just jumped out at me. And it's interesting, Diane, because, as you know, one of the monologues that we did this year was on exactly that. I mean, we began the monologues with voiceovers of people who were victim-blaming. And naysayers, you know, with this whole Me Too movement and so on this year, things really are building. And then we had projected, the video projection was a quote by Jackson Katz, who's done a great deal of work on masculinity. And he basically notes our language, because he notes that when we talk about assault and when we talk about violence against women, we talk about the victims, we talk about the women. You know, even the term violence against women talks about women. We talk about the victims. We're not talking about the offenders, right? So we put that up on the screen and about how victim-centric it is as opposed to talking about the offenders. And then the men came on stage, and then the men all read firsthand accounts of assaults that had happened to women by men who were in positions of power and trust. And they range from a little girl who was at the age of 4 assaulted by her kindergarten teacher to a woman who wasn't believed by the police officer and was accused of her own assault, even though she had been you know, the classic rape by a stranger in an alley and had tons of physical evidence and had gone to the hospital and there was no reason she shouldn't have been believed. She was loaded with physical evidence. Her father was a police officer, all of this stuff, but she was blamed for her own assault and had to, was, you know, he threatened to send her to jail and all of this. And one of the stories was a woman written by a woman who had been assaulted by her priest. And it was just so riveting. It was a spoken word piece. It was so powerful. And it just, all I could think of was the privilege of these men in positions of power, you know? And it doesn't matter if we keep catching these guys, and even if we hold them accountable, Diane, right? Even if we hold them accountable, until we take down the systems, you know, we've got to take down patriarchy itself. We've got to take down the systems that allow this male dominant, the systems of male dominance to continue. We've got to put women in positions of power in government and organizations and get a more even keel, or it's just going to continue. I just think that's what the problem really is. This is male privilege because of the fact that we've got such an uneven, you know, that the systems are so darned male dominant. I really do think that's at issue here.
Well, and it's very interesting to me that you mentioned, Reverend Diane, that they didn't know the difference. So this, I think, is one of the big keys, that this becomes a normalcy. This becomes something that men grow up with, as you said, in the various ways we are taught, you know, sex education, et cetera, that, and particularly with the privilege and the power, that it becomes a normalcy to have dominance over, whether it be young girls or young boys.
Yeah.
Social dominance is a key to everything I've come to understand. It is a basic animal instinct, but we are not animals. We are humans. So social dominance should not be the normative experience for all human life. And I agree with Adele. How do we? I kept thinking, my God, all these years I've been so comfortable. I haven't seen it. How come I could never see it? And that's because I was kept busy. And I loved working in the church. I loved going to all of the parishes that I lived in. I loved all the jobs that I had. I felt like I was contributing. I had meaning and purpose in my life, and this was of God. I never connected my not being able to function as an equal in that quote-unquote society with a form of domination. Because I just never wanted to do what they do. And that's one of the things that women priests are really very aware of. We do not want to become women dressed in clerical clothes. redefine Catholicism, because they don't get to do the framework.
Well, and women don't think in the terms of dominance. They think in the terms of cooperation. That's the very difference of our psyche. So let me ask each of you, because we're getting toward the end of the show, how can a listener then get involved? You both said something very interesting about, you know, Reverend Diane, you were saying you were just busy and it wasn't, you were fulfilled, but it wasn't on your radar. Now that it's on people's radar, how can they, and I know there's myriads of ways, get involved maybe with each of your organizations, either what you're doing as Women Priests or what, Adele, you're doing with Human Up or your the Planet Project. Tell us in a couple minutes each maybe of how people can move forward.
Great. Who'd you like to go first? I'll go.
Adele, go.
Is that okay? Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. We at Human Up are about to reorganize, so this is perfect timing for anybody who'd like to get involved on any level. The folks can contact us through either our email or through our website, Facebook page, social media, message us anything at all. We respond to any of the above. and we're about to hold a reorganization meeting here in Atlanta. So if you're local, great. But even if you're not local, we'd love to have your voice. So perhaps you'd like to write something and add it to our monologues. Our monologues, by the way, are not just pieces that are written by men. Some of them have been written by women. So as I said, some of them are firsthand accounts about women who have been assaulted. Some of them are pieces about rape culture that have been written by women. Some of them and that are very solution-oriented, most of our pieces are very solution-oriented. Some of them, and we are very intersectional, so we definitely address racism, we address homophobia, we address transphobia, environmental degradation, you name it, we are very, very intersectional. And even if you're, and we are definitely interested in reaching out to internationally, so even if you're not in Atlanta, we want to hear from you. We'd love to have your skills and your input. We're really good at being artists and activists and educators. We are terrible at being administrators, and at, we're not great with our nonprofit skills, and we really would love to have some input and some help. So we are putting an outreach out there, putting it out to the universe. And if anybody out there would like to help us, we will be beyond thrilled to have your skills and input. We're really very much in need, and we feel that what we're doing is critical right now because we're really trying to engage men as allies. We have a bank of actors and activists, teaching artists who will go out and do programming in communities. We're going to be traveling. We're continuing to travel to do work in communities, in colleges, in schools. So we need people who can educate and perform. So if you're interested in any of that or in any of the administrative skills, we need people who can grant write and can help us bean count. Please be in touch. And in terms of networking the community and partnering. So that's my spiel.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
So again, thank you, Adele. So again, that's Adele Taylor Ulrich, U-L-R-I-C-H. And you can find out more about Adele at qhu-man-up.org. And of course, there's a Facebook page, Planet Project Human Up. And they have Twitter and Instagram as well. Or you can email Adele at theplanetprojectmovement@gmail.com. Thank you, Adele, for being on the Peace Brain Show. So, Reverend
really
Diane, how can people find out more about what you're doing or join you in your teachings as well?
Well, I think there have been many people who have come and wanted to be part of what I'm part of. But one of the things I've noticed that is a roadblock is that they're coming at this new phase of understanding with all of the old baggage that they're carrying. So I would caution everybody to do one thing, and that is sit with your uncomfortability and find people to talk with that are that will nurture you to come to an understanding of who you are and where you're called in this society, in this group. I have a friend that is extremely passionate about domestic violence. But she's so passionate, she's angry, and it turns everyone off. People that I work with in interfaith want to embrace people of other faiths, but their goal is to bring other people of other faiths to themselves. And it just doesn't work.
That doesn't work. You're right.
So from a spiritual perspective, I think you have to sit with yourself maybe for a long time before you step out to join anything or to be anywhere, and just listen to yourself and ask yourself, what does this uncomfortability speak to myself? And for God's sakes, don't be afraid, because either we move on, with something new, or we take the old and regurgitate it for the next generation. And I think we're all looking for something that is new. How do, and listen to the questions. I mean, honest to God, it is exhausting. But peace comes with, you know, for me, I should say, my peace comes with the knowledge that I can look at uncomfortability in the face and let my heart be broken and cry. Unpeel those, as you unpeel an onion and you get closer to the center of it, all those tears just come out of you and you think your life is just a perfect loss, that you've done absolutely nothing to engage in the fullness of life. When in reality, that's what you're doing. That's how you, how we renew ourselves. So for the most part, I just sit with people and listen to them. And
excellent.
I put myself in the place where I want a church to be. I center myself with African Americans. I'm a member of the Concerned Black Clergy. And I also have a radio show called Take a Stand. I insert myself in the LGBT community. My friends, that was the only church that allowed me to be ordained. I insert myself with 1 Billion Rising, Atlanta. And it really has been a wake-up call for me, because the energy that is, you know, I wish I was 40 years younger so that I could participate in all that energy at a high level. Sometimes I feel
you
like
have
I'm
amazing
just
amazing energy.
I'm sitting there. But I think what I've learned is by inserting myself in places where I'm not in a building that's called Catholic, I found people who really share Catholic faith. Mm-hmm. When I listen to these refugees and the longing of their souls to find a place to belong, really and truly, I think that is where we need to be. Who do you want to sit at your table? And they, you know, I don't have a lot of space here, so I go to theirs.
That is excellent. What a great message. And I think you just walked us through the Peace Brain meditation, so I will go over that. That, what a beautiful suggestion. Seriously, that was awesome. So thank you, Reverend Diane. I really appreciate you being on the Peace Brain show.
Thank you for inviting me. And Adele,
oh, very...
I love you. I love you both.
So
love you.
Everyone can find out more about Reverend Diane at dianedaugherty'sblog.blogspot.com. That's dianedaugherty'sblog.blogspot.com. So thank you both for being on the Peace Brain Show. So everyone, take a breath, and we will go through the Peace Brain meditation quickly because we're really toward the end of the show, but I want to echo what Reverend Diane said to us. So first of all, close your eyes, give yourself a grounding cord, that beautiful connection to the center of the planet. I like to envision a beam of light or a tree trunk coming out of the base of my spine and going all the way down into Mother Earth. And just anchoring, grounding into Mother Earth, letting everything that is not of this present moment go flow down that grounding cord into the earth to be recycled as new energy. Just let it go. Be in the present moment. And think about your own life. You know, I want you to realize that all of us carry baggage with us. All of us have experiences that have brought pain and suffering. All of us have belief systems that we've been told are true. That all of these things are not who we truly are. They are illusions. They are that those layers of the onion that we can peel away to really find out our true divine self and what you are here for. What is your purpose here on the world, on the earth, and what you are here to do? Because each of us have a unique talent, have gifts that we came in with to use on this beautiful planet, this beautiful life. So I invite you to take your time and your own time to begin to look at those layers. Look at your uncomfortableness. Look at the baggage that you may be carrying that is not your true divine self. That is experiences and pain and suffering and belief systems that you've been carrying for years that you can let go of now. You can allow those to flow down the grounding cord into Mother Earth. Those beliefs, that uncomfortableness, that pain, to be recycled into Mother Earth as new energy, and to free yourself with whatever pain and uncomfortableness you have been walking around with, the baggage you're carrying, and find within your heart that beautiful sacred spark of your divinity, your love for yourself. Nurture yourself. And as was suggested, find friends who can really sit with you and listen and nurture you as well. That you are a beautiful being within yourself. That spark of both the male and female divinity that lives within you. You can balance that masculine and feminine energy within yourself so that you can be allowed to cry and to express your grief and your pain. And you can be allowed to be joyful and happy and creative, and that spark of the artist come through, and to really make a difference in the world in that way. So take a breath and know that you can sit within this sacred part of your heart, going through your life, finding your true self. And then when you find your true self, and this is a journey, of course, throughout your life to do this, to morph and change and find more exciting bits of yourself along the way, that you find your passions, you find where your activism steps in, where your ability to use your talents and gifts can help organizations such as Human Up or the Catholic Church, or these other places, the local neighborhoods, the refugees, the women's shelters, the homeless centers, wherever you can be of service, for we as humans are meant to be of service to each other. Take a breath. Bring yourself back to your center, your chair, wherever you are. Open your eyes and know that you have just connected your peace brain. You've brought your heart and your head together. You can go back to the spot at any time, and I encourage you to do so, to explore, to find the wonders of who you are. So thank you for tuning in to the Peace Brain Show today. I really appreciate you being here with my guests, Reverend Diane Daugherty and Adele Taylor Ulrich. And I invite you also to go to my website, tourismforpeace.com, or you can email me, Dr. Gail Lash, at hello@peacebrain.org. So now please go forth and activate your peace brain daily and create your place of peace, your peace park, and put your mark on our World Peace Trails map. Many, many blessings. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Akashic Records readings, her peace plans for your business or organization, and her recently published book, Opt for Peace, 9 Essential Steps to Achieving Peace, Power, and Prosperity. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 1 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern to the Peace Brain Show for your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.